Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and I'm really excited to be here to bring you an episode. I love to share cutting-edge information about how you can become your best vibrant self, your most vibrant self, and how you can take charge of your own health by understanding how your body works, what can go wrong, and how you can put things into place and be empowered to take charge. We kind of know that our healthcare system is a bit on the broken side, and the kind of care that most people are getting is disease management and band-aid care, as I like to call it. And I like to at our upcoming conference that's happening in upcoming SHINE event. It's a scientific and holistic investigation of nutritional endocrinology happening in October 30th through 1st, and Mike is going to be one of my featured speakers. So I'm really excited to introduce you to Mike Mutzel. Hello, Mike.
Hello there. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Hey, doing fabulous. And I'm very excited to be at your conference. And thanks so much for thinking of me.
Yeah, you know, I really was impressed when we had this conversation. I don't know if it was 6 months ago or so when I first had you on the show. And I said to Lynn, oh, we got to get him back. And we should really get him to speak at the conference because you speak the language of like really getting deep and underneath the hood and underneath the covers and trying to understand what's going on. So we can manipulate and empower people to manipulate what they're doing through their nutrition. And that's it's a really refreshing breath of fresh air. So that's why I wanted you to come back. And I want to get into a little bit more of the hormone connection. And people don't realize that their hormones affect their appetite. So let's just start there. Like, how do hormones have an effect on appetite? People blame hormones for their appetite, blame hormones for being overweight or having slow metabolism. But do you just make that connection with hormones and appetite?
Yeah, great connection. And we can talk about a variety of different hormones. But when people think of hormones, that your listeners are pretty advanced. You know, we think of like cortisol and testosterone and thyroid hormone. But what's really unique is there's many hormones released from our GI tract, actually, which is pretty profound. And so our gut is an endocrine organ. I'm getting a little feedback. Are you?
I'm not, actually.
You're not? Okay. I'll just ignore it. Sometimes, if you're not getting feedback, then we're good. I'll just keep talking. Yeah, so our GI tract is really powerful in terms of like being an endocrine organ, and it releases over 26 different hormones that control appetite and cravings, even control the inflammatory response. So it's really profound. There's one hormone in particular, and we can dive into the 26 different subtypes of these hormones that are just as powerful as cortisol or thyroid hormone or testosterone or estrogen. That's how impactful they are on the body. And so what's really unique, and it kind of weaves in this whole gut-brain axis, because when we eat in a really calm, relaxed state, when we chew our food, when we eat in line with our circadian rhythm, which we can talk about, you know, these gut hormones are optimized. But what we see is so many people are mindlessly eating while they're stressed. They're on Instagram or Facebook while they're chowing down food, driving, and so these gut hormones are not released properly. And so then we have a propensity to be overweight and to have cravings, and those signals, to our brain that would normally function, are basically our gut telling our brain that we just ate a meal, are not functioning properly. And so people are chronically hungry and have maldigestion and chronic inflammation. And so these gut hormones are playing such a huge role. And then, you know, leptin is one of these that we can talk about too. But, and here's just before you, if you want to ask any other additional questions or want me to dive deeper, I just want to, you know, leave this conversation with people understanding that the way that bariatric surgery and gastric bypass causes such rapid weight loss in individuals. And again, I'm not necessarily promoting the procedure, is because it changes these gut hormones and it changes the gut microbiome. So that's how powerful, you know, the intestine is as an overall metabolic regulator. So, go ahead.
Before you get too far along there, I just wanted to stop and just make sure, because you have a lot of great information and I want to make sure that everybody's really grasping it. So, you know, just in summary, the gut is really, it's not just this tube that goes through your body. It's metabolically active. It's basically a big endocrine gland, probably the biggest endocrine gland in the entire body, right? Because it produces more. Would you say there are at least 26 of these hormones produced by the gut to regulate it? So we have the hormones that are produced outside of the body, outside of the gut, you know, like cortisol and thyroid hormone and leptin and all. And then we have the hormones produced in the gut. And so there's a distinction between them. And so what I want to do is clarify for folks, you said that these gut hormones are thrown off when we're eating under a rush and when we're eating under stress, and that throws off the way that food is metabolized. And I think that's a really key point for people to realize, is that if you're eating when you're in this rushed state, when you're distracted, you may be way overeating because your body's not getting the signal that you're full. Did I hear that correctly, Mike?
That's 100% accurate. Yeah, and we can go into the various, even, you know, skipping breakfast is linked with alterations in this gut hormone. So a huge under-recognized aspect of weight loss you just highlighted.
Mm-hmm. It's just stopping. And so those of you who've been on my shows and been following me for a long time, you understand and you know that I talk all the time about the first way to optimize your digestion is not by chewing your food and not by taking digestive enzymes or stomach acid. It's by relaxing your mind. And it's by getting yourself in that ready state so that all these hormones are playing like this fine-tuned symphony all together so everything runs beautifully. The gist of it, Mike?
That's the gist of it, yeah. And I'm glad you articulated it in that fashion. And, you know, along those lines, you know, medical studies are now validating exactly what you said. And they're actually stimulating the vagal nerve. So that main highway system that I'm sure your listeners are familiar with, it's linked with the relaxation response, the vagal nerve, deep paced breathing, you know, meditation, tai chi, qigong, heart math, all these things all innervate this nerve, which feeds the GI tract, which turns on these hormones, stimulates motility of the gut. So it's moving, you know, north to south, which is what we want, and all that. You know, medical researchers are actually finding ways to stimulate this and cause weight loss, and they're finding good results with that. So, you know, it's pretty interesting. Obviously, I'm not encouraging anyone to go out and get some sort of, you know, vagal nerve implant or some stimulatory device, but it's nice to know that, you know, what our grandmother had, you know, told us eons ago, and our parents had taught us, and, you know, naturopathic functional medicine we've known for a while, is just slow down, be mindful, chew your food, and be in a calm, relaxed state before you eat so that you can optimize your digestion. And also now we know that these hormones play such a big role.
Absolutely. That's well said. And the whole thing about the stimulating the vagus nerve, you do not have to have surgery to stimulate the vagus nerve. There are some practices that we're going to be sharing and showing at the SHINE conference. We have a whole topic, one section that I'm going to do on vagus nerve and gut and brain and the connection between them and activities that you can learn to do. And if you're a practitioner, to teach your client to do so that you can actually stimulate it. But the stuff that Mike said and the stuff that I teach all the time, the heart math, the breathing, the appreciation, you know, and all the other things, the relaxation, the meditation, yoga, all of those things have been shown to have a positive effect on digestion, right? So that's the first step. If we're going to have takeaways, and I'd love to have people have takeaways of actions to do, just remind yourself, slow down, stop before you eat, go into a place of relaxation, breathing, and appreciation, and then remind yourself to do that throughout the meal, just to go, okay, I'm there, and then you scarf your food down, because then you're back into that what they call the sympathetic nervous system state, which is the opposite of the vagus nerve. And that's causing everything to slow down and all those hormones to get out of whack and the valves in between the sections of your digestive tract to kind of cramp up and everything's in a high alert state, not focusing on getting your food digested. So that's a first step there. So you mentioned leptin, and I know people have heard a lot about leptin, but some people may not be clear what that is. You know, leptin's the hormone that's secreted by your fat cells and controls appetite. And the question I always get from people is, well, Dr. Rita Marie, if leptin is produced by fat cells and leptin is what turns off my appetite, then why am I hungry all the time? Because look at me, you know, I got plenty of fat cells. So I would love to hear you address how leptin has an effect on appetite and what effect it has even beyond appetite control.
Yeah, there's so much there. And I definitely want to get into that. But there's just something I just have to share that kind of expands upon what we just talked about. And I'm going to dive into this at the conference in a little bit more depth, but I want people to be aware of this. So when we talk about stress reduction, it's not just about, you know, getting calm in a relaxed state. It's also about suppressing the inflammatory response. And so there's this what's known as a reflex arc, this called a cholinergic reflex arc. It's kind of a tongue twister. But when you're in that calm state, you really put the brakes on inflammation. And every disease state we can think of and name, you know, from diabetes, arthritis, autoimmunity, depression, neurologic disorders, you know, premature mortality and reduced quality of life is linked with inflammation. And so that's what's really, really important about these mind-body-based therapies and calming down before you eat. And so we're going to talk at the conference about, you know, some tips and ways that that can work. And that's really huge. And it ties into your, you know, segue question there about leptin. You know, leptin does so much, it plays such a huge role in appetite. And so it sort of functions like a energy gauge, if you will. And so like you mentioned, so people have excess body fat, so then they have high leptin. So the thinking is like, well, if I have high leptin, why am I still hungry? Well, that's because in the hypothalamus, kind of your master hormone center in the brain, the leptin message gets kind of desensitized. So imagine, and I'm taking this analogy from a medical doctor from A4M, Jennifer Stanton. She said, and it's a great analogy, you know, if you were to order pizza, okay, and one pizza man showed up to the door, you'd let him in. But if you ordered pizza and 200 pizza men showed up, you know, you wouldn't let any of them in because you'd be fearful, right, that they would all.
Yeah, it's a pizza man conspiracy.
So that's kind of what's going on with leptin. You know, if you have so much fat, adipocytes, so much fat, you know, excess body fat around the body, you know, leptin is released largely, actually almost exclusively from fat cells. The hypothalamus sees so much of the message, and it's like saying, okay, enough is enough, guys. I'm not even going to listen to your message here. And really what, you know, insulin and testosterone and all these hormones do is they latch on to a receptor, just like when you put your key in a lock and you turn the lock and the door opens. That's what these hormones do. They latch onto receptors now, so the leptin receptor becomes resistant to its message. And so what that means is that the message is not there. So people are chronically hungry, even though their blood leptin levels are, you know, really high. So that's part one of a two-part bad equation. The second aspect of elevated leptin is that in the immune system, leptin plays a huge role of stimulating, again, inflammation. And so what this means, you know, again, just to pause right here, inflammation is linked with all these diseases, but it's also linked with impairment in the ability to burn body fat. So the greatest way to, you know, cause someone to store more fat and to become metabolically dysfunctional is to become inflamed, because that means you're going to be insulin resistant. So that's what leptin does. And so it impairs the ability to burn fat by driving these inflammatory processes. And that's why we see leptin linked with arthritis. We see leptin linked with Hashimoto's. We see it linked with all sorts of autoimmune diseases, even cardiovascular disease. In fact, high blood leptin is more specific and sensitive and predictive, you know, a higher incidence of myocardial infarction, a heart attack, compared to high sensitivity C-reactive protein. A lot of physicians don't know that, but this is like, you know, mainstream research that has shown this. So, you know, basically the end of the day is, you know, when you have excess body fat, you're going to have high blood leptin levels and inflammation. And so that just creates this vicious cycle of, you know, excess appetite and impaired fat burning and chronic inflammatory response, which is not good.
Wow, that's so intense. So nobody's testing for leptin. They finally started testing for CRP over the last, you know, half a decade or so. in mainstream medicine, whereas in functional medicine, we've been doing that for a long time. So tell us about leptin. Can it be tested for easily? And is the test reliable? Is it useful to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it is now commercially available through Quest and LabCorp and your traditional labs, but it is a little expensive. And here's the thing about, you know, leptin, just like all the other hormones, you know, for example, cortisol, most people know that cortisol should rise in the morning and slowly decrease throughout the day. Well, leptin follows that similar pattern. So make sure that if you are going to, you know, get your blood levels tested, that you're very consistent with testing them and that you test first thing in the morning. But here's the thing about leptin, you know, that I don't necessarily advocate. I love tests, and I'm a huge promoter of laboratory tests and biomarkers. But the thing about leptin is, as I mentioned, 99% of all of the body's leptin is released from fat tissue. So you can just do a body mass index, or I'm sorry, body fat percentage. And if that's not available, you can do body mass index, although that's not as reliable. So if your body fat is above 20% for men, and above 25% for women, the probability of you having high leptin is exceedingly high, right? Mm. And what I mean by high leptin, I mean leptin into this quote-unquote unhealthy range. And so I think it's more important for people just to kind of be honest with themselves, look in the mirror. If you have a lot of excess fat around the buttocks, around the stomach, and around the legs, you know, your leptin levels may be approaching that unhealthy range. And, you know, again, it creates this vicious cycle of the chronic inflammation of fat cells on fire, and we can talk about that. And then the hunger and the cravings. And so I think it's really important, you know, to improve muscle mass and to, even in the elderly and women, to increase resistance training and eat within your circadian rhythm to keep leptin levels in check. So, yes, it's available, but I think, you know, the Eric Braverman, who's a best-selling author, has written about this, that you know, leptin levels correlate directly with body fat percentage. So again, if men over 20%, women over 25%, you probably have leptin levels that are starting to get high.
Got it. So it's not worth testing, because chances are that if you just look at your body fat, take your waist hip ratio or something like that even, you're going to know that you've got leptin, elevated leptin. And if you have elevated leptin, it's likely you have leptin resistance, which just fits into that whole pattern along with insulin resistance as well, and creates that extra, that spare tire around the middle. You said something that I wanted to go back to, and that was fat cells on fire. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. You know, when we think of a fat cell, we think of kind of like this little balloon-like structure that stores, you know, extra calories. And that is true to an extent, but when you really biopsy a fat cell, what they call, you know, in medical terminology, an adipocyte, just like when we talk about muscle, it's really a myocyte anyway. So when you biopsy the adipocytes, what you see is, yeah, there's a little bit of stored lipids, but there's also a lot of immune cells in there. And so as it turns out that this kind of coalescence and this communication and kind of shared space between the immune system, you know, in and around the fat cell, and kind of the metabolic side of the fat cell helped us in, you know, our ancestral, you know, kind of primal times, you know, during starvation and so forth. So that if we were to get, you know, say an infection or, you know, tuberculosis or something like that, or some sort of trauma, that the immune system could ramp up a response very quickly. It would have fuel right there. So that's why fat cells are you know, found, you know, kind of co-mixed, if you will, with a lot of different immune cells. That's normal and that's healthy. But what happens is when individuals get into this overweight, obese category, leptin starts to rise. Leptin affects this really critical immune set point, you know, a T regulatory cell. It's a type of lymphocyte, like a white blood cell, that is very anti-inflammatory. It's very protective. It will help protect us from thyroid disease and Hashimoto's and, you know, rheumatoid arthritis and all the chronic inflammatory disease. This is a good guy. When we eat a healthy diet, when we have vitamin D, when we exercise, when we meditate, we increase these healthy T regulatory cells. What turns out, one of the main ways that leptin is problematic for fat burning is by suppressing the T regulatory cells. So it's basically, you know, suppressing the policemen of our immune system, and that allows kind of the robbers and burglars, the not so helpful inflammatory immune cells, to go crazy and start releasing these things called cytokines and interleukins. And basically, these are pro-inflammatory products that, again, cause our cells to become insulin resistant, which ultimately affects the fat-burning process and affects cellular biochemistry that we want. You know, so this is a bad thing. It suppresses everything, you know, that we want to have going. So that's what we see is when people gain weight, and this is documented, and I talk about it in my book, you know, in detail in Belly Fat Effect, is that when you biopsy fat cells of say, you know, lean individuals, and then compare a biopsy, you know, under a microscope of fat cells of overweight individuals, there's a sevenfold increase in the amount and number of immune cells in there. So that's why we call this fat on fire. And this has been proposed and hypothesized in research as to one of the reasons why people can't lose weight, you know, because they're restricting themselves of food and seeming to do everything right. Exercising, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this, Dr. Rita Marie, where people say, I feel like I'm doing everything right. I'm sleeping well, I'm exercising, I'm doing this. I can't lose weight. It's like, what is going on? And I really think it's this fat cell on fire, you know, and studies actually show that. So I think the thing that's really missing from this weight loss resistance discussion is an anti-inflammatory diet and anti-inflammatory lifestyle strategies to calm down this fat cell on fire so that we can start burning fat more efficiently. And, you know, part of that equation is leptin, yes, but it's also circulation. And so bouncing on a trampoline, jumping up and down, moving blood flow, dry brushing is really important to getting oxygen in there. And again, we'll talk a little bit more about this at the SHINE conference. This hypoxia or oxygen deficit keeps the fire burning. And so it's really important. That's one of the reasons why, you know, getting a standing desk, walking to work or riding your bike to work and moving throughout the day is so important for keeping the blood flow and circulation going and minimizing this hypoxia, which is just adding fuel to the fire.
That's awesome. What a great analogy. And what a great look-see. And as you said that, I'm standing up at my desk. So I have one of those standing desks. And I have my little stair thing, my stair climber that I pull in periodically throughout the day. Because it is really important to keep moving. It really is. And, you know, when I've been in a conference for 4 days straight and I'm sitting on airplanes, I just feel, you know, I just don't feel as good. I feel more achy and whatnot. So it's a really good thing. I think there was something you said that I wanted to go back to. It was the seven times the immune system. Oh, yeah, because it's like a vicious cycle, though, right? Because you've got this extra fat, and then you go on this really clean diet to try to clean up the extra fat. So you're, you know, calorically restricted or whatnot, and still have the extra fat because of all these immune cells, and then the immune cells are causing you not to burn the fat. And how do you break that vicious cycle? I mean, you did mention anti-inflammatory diet, but maybe we can be a little more specific about how you break that cycle when it's in that looping mode and we can't get out of that weight loss resistance mode.
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think it starts with a series of small steps. And one step begets the next step. And it can start with just moving first thing in the morning. And so, you know, it's kind of, I don't want to say exploiting, but taking advantage of our body's natural rhythms throughout the day and eating and exercising during those rhythms. So let me give you an example. For example, and we're going to talk about this more at the conference, is our circadian rhythm. And this is why, you know, women ovulate at a certain time predictably every month. And this is why men's testosterone are high in the morning. Is our bodies have these internal molecular clocks that govern biochemistry. It's really pretty cool. And it turns out that while we're sleeping, we burn a lot of fat. So, you know, tip number one, get ample sleep every single night. And the way that you can screw up your circadian rhythm is by getting on your iPhone right before you go to bed or reading from your computer before you go to bed or turning on lights. So it's not just about getting those quote-unquote 8 hours of sleep in. It's about improving your sleep hygiene. And so that means the 2 hours before sleep, you could get some UVX glasses where you're blocking the blue light, artificial light. If you have to be on your computer, then download the program called F.Lux, which will help to block that. And you know, use candles at night instead of a bunch of bright lights and things around the house. And try to go to bed at the same time every night. And again, this is important, not just for resetting your adrenals and all the, you know, aspects there, but keeping your circadian rhythm in line, because what we see is people's leptins become skewed. And so then they're eating outside of their circadian rhythm, and that's bad too. So Again, and we're burning fat while we're sleeping. So that's tip number one. And then first thing in the morning, what we find is that when people do cardio, you know, and this can be walking. It doesn't have to be driving to the gym. This can be walking around your neighborhood, you know, at a brisk pace, maybe finding a hill to do some sort of intervals. You know, it doesn't have to be sprints, but just something so that you're kind of this much winded. So that kind of talk and walk method, it's a, you don't need a heart rate monitor. If it's challenging to talk to your spouse or your workout partner, then you're in that sweet spot. And so, again, first thing in the morning, our body is still in that kind of fat-burning mode from when we're, you know, when we're sleeping. We can take advantage of that. And if you add in a little bit of green tea, a little bit of white tea, or even coffee beforehand, caffeine really helps to, you know, kind of affect the fat-burning process in a beneficial way. So it has what's known as this glycogen-sparing effect. So instead of burning sugar while you're walking or doing your cardio, you'll preferentially burn fat. And so then you're kind of reprogramming your biochemistry, which is cool. And studies show that people that eat breakfast, do you have any questions there?
Yeah, no, I was going to ask about, you just went into it with the breakfast. So what about eating before the exercise or after the exercise?
Generally after, you know, and it totally depends on the person. You know, some people, when they first start doing this, their blood sugar has, you know, they're in a state of insulin resistance. So they can crash, you know, they can go on these peaks and valleys and then their adrenal glands fire and stuff. So if that sounds like you, where if you go without food and get really jittery, then you can have a protein shake, like maybe 15, 20 grams, not a smoothie with the banana and all that, just like
right,
a protein
right.
only.
The protein,
you know?
Yeah, protein or green powder.
Right, just to keep blood sugar kind of even and stuff like that. But once you get more metabolically adapted and keto adapted and stuff, it's not really a problem. But in an ideal world, and again, you know, bodybuilders and you know, fitness competitors have been doing this forever. You know, and that's kind of the world that I came from before I got my master's degree in nutrition is fitness. And you know, but pre-contest, and again, let me just pause. I'm not trying to get anyone to be a bodybuilder or fitness model. I'm just telling you what they do, and it seems to work for them, is, you know, doing the cardio in the morning on an empty stomach with caffeine. So the answer to your question is try not to eat before the days that you do cardio. But on other days, studies actually show that eating a little bit of protein and healthy fats can help the fat-burning process, can help to activate these powerful gut hormones that we introduce the call on. So breakfast overall, I think, is beneficial. But, again, be mindful if you can. Don't eat it while you're driving your car.
Absolutely. Wow, these are great tips. So we've got the sleep, the importance of the sleep. And I love that I do ZF.Lux. Actually, Lynn told me about it, and I use that on my computer. I never heard of the glasses, so those are worth looking into, and the candles and having the same bedtime. So the sleep is so, so critical for fat burning. And I personally do find that when I'm under a lot of deadlines and I'm consistently staying up really late, that I'm eating very little, but I'm either not losing weight or I'm gaining weight. It's frustrating because I'm like, how much less could I eat? I'm eating perfect food. But it's really related to the sleep and the whole cycle there. So, and then the first thing in the morning exercise. And for two people who have a hard time, like with the getting up, or people who live in, you know, Alaska and some of the cooler places where it's hard to get up in the morning and go out before working because it's either icy on the roads or it's dark, whatever. Is what about the exercising indoors? You didn't mention that. Of course, we want to go outdoors when we can, but exercising indoors, you know, running up and down the stairs with an exercise ball or doing some sort of a treadmill or something, does that seem to have a similar effect?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. But, you know, I think part of the reason why, and I've gone through this and I'm speaking, you know, to other people that I've, you know, coached and stuff on this is, you know, getting out of bed can be a challenge, you know, due to, you know, maybe feelings of malaise or what have you. But I think if you really, and this gets into kind of mindset, you know, why do you want to lose weight? You know, what's the bigger meaning? How is this going to impact not only your life and the people in your family, but the world? Like, are you, you know, exercising so that you can live longer for your grandchildren or so that you can be more productive at your workplace, whatever it is, and set that intention before you go to bed. And that really helps to get you out of bed. And it sounds kind of woo-woo and out there, but it really does help. And so I think for people, obviously there's biochemical reasons why people have a hard time getting out of bed. But I've found that if someone kind of looks at their bigger purpose and their calling and what sort of good they're trying to, impart on the world, and set that intention before going to bed, getting out of bed is easier. And also exercising becomes easier too, because you have a reason as to why you want to exercise, kind of link that with your big why, as we call it sometimes. So, but, and then again, if you get up consistently, it becomes easier and easier to get up. And then also, especially if you can get some light in the morning, light is the best way to kind of realign your circadian rhythm first thing in the morning. So outdoors preferable, but if you can't do it, or you live in Alaska or Iceland, whatever it is, just walk up your stairs or get a treadmill, or even just doing jumps, jumping up and down, and like a jump squat is a great way to activate your heart rate and get some of that major muscle groups going, which is great for fat loss.
That's awesome. And then also, what do you think about the UV lights that for people who are in some of these really long winter days, that and for 6 months out of the year, the sun isn't shining very much at all. Do you find that those to be useful? Like somebody sitting in front of one of those lights 5 minutes in the morning and then doing some inside exercise, could that be effective as well?
Yeah, I think that's really effective. There's a lot of great data around that. And I have some family members in a Seattle, Northwest. Of course, the weather's kind of changing up here. It used to be really dark and dreary, like back in the late 90s, but very effective, using those lights. So I think that's awesome. And again, that's in training your circadian rhythm. And so, it's the morning routine, but also the evening routine. So trying to mitigate that exposure to artificial light at night is key too.
Awesome. Yeah. So the combination at both ends, that's really good. So we've been talking for quite a while here, and there's one thing I did want to get to, was just connect up for us the brain and the gut. And we already talked about the vagus nerve, and that's the connection from the brain, from the sympathetic nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system, down to the gut. Are there any other connections via the hormones or via any other connections that you want to make here?
Yeah, I mean, it gets a little deep, if you talk about these different neuronal connections and stuff like that. But, basically the vagal nerve is the main highway, that's going to kind of innervate from gut to brain. And so that's where the pace, breathing, and heart math really comes to be quite powerful. But also the hormones released from the gastrointestinal tract speak to the brain as well. And so we kind of talked about, in generalities, these hormones, there's 26 of them. One of them that is really important, and a lot of drug companies are making, analogs that affect this hormone, is called GLP-1. And that affects systemic insulin sensitivity. So for preventing diabetes and balancing blood sugar, GLP-1 is huge. But it also reduces inflammation in the brain. And it sends other appetite and /satiety messages to the brain. So that one's one that I think is key in this whole gut-brain axis link. And one of the best ways to increase GLP-1 is kind of some of the things we've already been talking about, is eating breakfast, actually, and having protein. Mm-hmm. And researchers have tracked, it's pretty profound, and researchers have tracked this, that people that eat breakfast have higher levels of GLP-1 throughout the day. And so they have better appetite regulation, and improved satiety and so forth, and less cravings, but also better blood sugar control, which is pretty neat. Another way to increase GLP-1 and a few other of these hormones that communicate with the brain is having more spices in the diet. So rosemary and garlic and ginger, all the flavonoids I know you talk about a lot, Dr. Marina Marie, are great for affecting these hormones. And then also fiber. So we've known that fiber is like satiating. And if you have a high fiber meal, you're going to feel full quick. And it's like, well, why is that? Well, yeah, fiber has water, but guess what? It also increases all these gut hormones that communicate with the brain and tell the brain that the body's full, so it doesn't need to continue to eat.
Well, so cool. It's interesting. You're saying all these things, and these are things that I've been teaching, you know, my people, and it's really nice when we can connect the actual, you know, the biochemistry to something that makes sense. Like, so the big why, we teach that all the time. If you don't have a big why, it's really hard to make that choice to get up. It's to make that choice to do your deep breathing and to get up and do the exercise and to make choices of the anti-inflammatory foods versus the, you know, the pizza and the beer. And it's just, it's really important in the whole heart mapping and the stress and the sleep. So those really tie back to the seven pillars that I'm going to be sharing at the Shine Conference, of how they interact and how we can use those seven pillars of health to really create balance and keep it restored. So this has been amazing stuff. And if you have anything else you want to add, otherwise maybe we can open it up to get some questions from the audience, if there are any. And then we'll make it a wrap.
Yeah, that sounds great. You know, I think we covered most of it, but again, I'm really excited about the conference and some of these, yeah, you know, topics that we talked about. We'll have a lot of visuals, so that if people are like, oh my gosh, that sounds a little intimidating or like a lot to swallow, don't worry, you know, at the conference, we're going to have a lot of great visuals and dive into this, you know, at a deeper level so that people can really understand this. And like you said, Dr. Marina Marie, it, you know, these are things that we've all kind of intuitively known, but it's so cool, you know, that now we have a science, so that anyone that's skeptical of all this functional medicine, it's like, well, here is the research to show that what we've known to be true forever and ever. And I think that's really powerful, because we all come across, you know, naysayers and skeptics, you know, family members that are in the traditional realm. And when you have these, you know, talking points at your fingertips, it really kind of gets people to open up and realize that what we're talking about has a lot of science, and they tend to listen more and make better lifestyle choices themselves. So it's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always tell people, when you understand why you're doing something, even if you don't remember and you don't have Mike's photographic memory to bring it back and name all these hormones, you don't have to. You understood. He explained it. You go, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, yeah, there was a real reason for that. So then you're much more likely to follow through than if somebody just handed you a list like religion. Here's your rules. Memorize them. You know, this is what you have to do. And then, you know, somebody else goes to another religion. And, well, here's your rules. And you go, wait, they're different, right? The same thing happens in our health and our diet religions too. It's like, here's your rules of this one and here's your rules of this one. But when you understand the underlying mechanism, you can make choices as to what works best for you in any given moment, in any given day. So I appreciate you, all the research I know you do, and all the ways you put it together, because you make it really clear. And for me, I just love it, because I love geeking out on all the details. So I'm going to open up for Lynn to see if there's any questions for you.
Sure.
So Lynn, go for it.
Hi. First of all, I really enjoy this. And what made me excited shows that being in Dr. Rita Marie's nutritional endocrinology program is working, is I actually understood most of what you said. So I felt really good about that.
Great.
And the other thing you were talking about with functional medicine, I was talking to a young man in my area. I live in the Minnesota, Iowa area, and I mentioned he was going into medicine. I suggested he look at functional medicine. He kind of rolled his eyes at me, but at least he knew what it was. That I actually thought that was a step in the right direction. So I had one other thing. You were talking about oxygen and how important that was, and that just emphasized again, you know, you start a meal with that meditative process, and what do? You take that deep breath. And so that will, again, help with that fat burning. And when you were talking about protein, some people have a hard time absorbing protein because they might have some digestive problems. And so I was wondering if you had some suggestions for that.
Yeah, that's such a great point. You know, I think experimenting with different types of protein, maybe looking at fish, looking at turkey, looking at ground, different cooking methods. And you can also get vegetarian proteins too. I'm not a vegetarian, but some days I will not eat any animal products just because I don't feel like it. So listen to your body, and, you know, maybe for people that have a lot of GI issues, start out with nuts. You can start out with plant-based proteins like you know, pea protein, there's hemp protein. I'm not a huge fan of rice protein, but and then just to tie in some research actually on pea protein, this is like supplemental pea protein, dramatically increases these gut hormones and helps with weight loss too. This is per Duke University, has done a lot of research there. So, you know, I think just playing around with it, hopefully that answers your question there. And then supplementing too can help with hydrochloric acid, you know, betaine and things like that. But I'm sure there's some proteins that people can, or whole foods that people can experiment with. You know, I know that like even grass-fed beef can be kind of tough on the stomach. You know, it's a lot to chew on, if you will. And so, you know, things like fish can be really helpful there.
Sprouted things. Like if you just take like mung beans or adjuki beans or lentils and you sprout them, that breaks down the proteins into amino acids and makes them much more digestible. Because the problem with not being able to handle the proteins in the gut is because you're not able to break that protein into amino acids. So if you can break it down before it goes in the body by allowing, you know, nature and the sprouting process to do it, or by adding some enzymes, making a shake and adding some enzymes and letting it sit for half an hour so that it digests outside the body, that can be helpful too.
Right.
Great.
And something like spirulina or the microalgae have good protein too.
Easy.
And then the last thing was you were talking about the importance of exercise and in the morning. And I, as she was talking about people in those darker areas, I am one of those people, and it gets to be 40, 50 below in the colder months, which can be 6 months out of the year. But I have a rebounder, and so I have a couple of tapes that I'm that old, they're still tapes, a family event, and I bounce and I watch these while I'm doing it, and I laugh. And, you know, you shouldn't have a day go by that you don't laugh. I mean, like, laugh. And and so I, in the winter time, when it's a little harder sometimes to get outside, that's what I do. So,
yeah, thank you for bringing that up. That's a good point. And one of our pillars of health is fun. And that laughter is part of the fun, because it's really, I think it's an important part of your health for so many reasons. And one is, you know, you do stimulate the vagus nerve when you're doing that deep breathing and you're doing that belly laugh. That's going to help stimulate that vagus nerve and relax everything. So there's so much of this that makes, you know, huge connections to each other. And I love the science, and I love what it plays out, because when people say, oh, yeah, you know, what about functional medicine, and you have somebody that smirks, it's like, there's much more science behind functional medicine approach than there is a Western medicine approach, because we're really looking at getting to the root cause, not covering things up with Band-Aid. Oh, we have a pill for that. Here's a pill. Get rid of the smoke. You know, pull out the batteries on the smoke detector and let some other part of the house burn down. And that's basically what you're doing when you're applying, you know, a lot of the Western medicine approaches. And there's just here's a drug to turn your headache off. Well, why not find out why you have a headache? Here's a drug to stop your stomach from making acid. Well, the problem isn't you're making too much acid. Generally, it's because the acid's going in the wrong place. Let's really, really take the time to understand it. And what Mike's laid out is it's a new paradigm of medicine that we're all moving into. And we're all part of creating this as the future of our entire healthcare system. And I know, you know, Mike's dedicated to it. I'm dedicated to it. Lynn's dedicated to it. Those folks in our nutritional endocrinology trainings are. And I know there's more of you out there that are dedicated to this, that are tired of having your family members, yourself, your clients being handed a pill to shut them up, basically. I mean, you take a medicine that shuts off the symptom, it's basically saying, shut up, you don't matter. And what we're saying is you do matter, and we want to get to the heart of what's going on. We want to empower you to make choices in your day-to-day life that you've never been taught before. You know, nobody ever really focused on it. Yeah, maybe you did grace before meals, but in my house it was, you know, bless this food, God, thank you very much, boom. And then everybody, it was like a race to the finish line. So it really didn't do the effect that it should have done. So we had kind of had the right idea. And I think the more that we get this message out there, and the more, you know, you're spreading the word and I'm spreading the word and we're all out there spreading the word, the more that we're demanding this sort of an approach to healthcare. We're going to gradually just the Western approach, the take a pill for it and, you know, just eat whatever you want, eat the factory produced foods and non-foods and just do it under stress. It's going to be going away. It's already starting in the 25 years I've been doing this. It's a long time. Some of you are probably not even that old. So 25 years I've been doing this. I've seen it change so much. I was like, you know, there were very few of me out there. And now there's a lot more of us. And I'm thrilled to see the various ways of approaching and training. And that's what we're doing. So if you are a health practitioner or you have health practitioners in your life that you'd like to see doing more of this sort of an approach, send them to Shine Conference Live. No, shineconferenceevent.com and get signed up and come on and join this new healthcare revolution because it's the wave of the future. And if you want to be on the cutting edge, get there now. So I don't mean to be on a soapbox, but I'm so passionate about this and so passionate about seeing this world change and stopping the suffering that I see people doing that they shouldn't have to suffer. Their loved ones shouldn't have to suffer. They shouldn't have to suffer. My parents shouldn't have had to die. My sister should not have had to die of cancer had she been educated and had she been gotten the right care and the right functional evaluations and learned all the things that Mike and I shared today. She'd still be with us. I know that. She was 43 years old. So we want to change that, and we want you to be part of it. Any other questions coming in, Lynn? Anybody on the tell people if they're on the phone how they can raise their hands.
I was just going to do that. So if you're on the phone and you want to ask a question, press 1 on your telephone keypad, and that will raise your hand and we can open your line. If you are on the web and you want to call in and talk live, the number is 424-243-9555. And again, hit 1 on your telephone keypad, and that will raise your hand.
Great. Super. Okay.
That's great information there. And then just to kind of highlight, too, do you have someone else coming in?
No.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, I was just going to say, you know, back to that caller, which was great, you know, what she was saying on the laughing and the, you know, jumping on the trampoline, watching family videos. You know, I mean, I think for all the emotional aspects and smiling, I mean, you know, all the neurotransmitters released through that process is great. But then also, like we talked about, is the blood flow. Like when you laugh in a deep belly laugh, you know, you're really increasing blood flow to the abdomen and abdominal region, which is critical, you know, again, for helping to circulate and prevent this fat on fire. So just want to commend her for, again, kind of doing something that she knew to be like healthy, but then here's another way that it is healthy. And so moving the core, activating the core, twisting, sit-ups, crunches, laughing, you know, stretching is all really good for kind of the biochemical aspects of helping to prevent fat cells from becoming too sick and inflamed. So I'm glad that she shared that story.
Yeah, thank you so much. All right.
Thank you.
So I think that that's it. So tell people how they can reach you if they want to find your book and how they can find out more.
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, again, thanks for having me on the podcast and inviting me to speak at your conference. I'm honored to be there. And if folks want to learn a little bit more about me, I have a book on Amazon. It's called Belly Fat Effect. And we talk about kind of the interconnectedness between diet, nutrition, and the gut health, not only the gut hormones, but also gut bacteria. And so it dives into a lot of depth there. And then I have some free videos around that at bellyfateffect.com. And I have a podcast as well. It's called High Intensity Health Radio, which people can tune into. And we we've had you on the show, Dr. Rita Marie, and we also have a lot of experts around the gut. And we talk about muscle, we talk about leptin, we talk about all kinds of fun stuff. So that's where folks can check out some of the things that I'm up to.
Fantastic. Thank you again so much for being here. And I'm so excited that we get to be together in just another little over a month at Shine. And if you guys want to join us and hear Mike in the flesh and get to ask him questions, it's shineconferenceevent.com. You'll be there with lots of other health mind or alternative minded health practitioners. We get MDs, we get DCs, we get nurses, acupuncturists, nutritionists, naturopaths. We get a wide variety of folks coming to the conference and just sharing in this joined mission and learning from each other and growing and also having a lot of fun. We're planning a lot of fun events fixed into it. It's not going to be one of your typical dry relicensure events where you just kind of sit there and watch slide after slide by. So this is going to be a lot of fun too. So thank you again, Mike, for being here. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and check out The Belly Fat Effect. It's an awesome book. I've been, you know, skimming through it. I haven't read the whole thing cover to cover, but I've read quite a number of sections, and it's quite a good book. So I highly recommend that you get that book and join us at Shine. So, and we'll talk to you again. We'll be back next week. Lynn, do we know what our topic is for next week?
Yeah, next week we have Steph Jackson continuing the talk on the microbiome.
Yeah, you want to come to that because we're going to talk about some of the fact that it's not just about, okay, just go to the store and buy any old probiotic supplement. And she's really good at helping people to customize the probiotics to their own needs and their own current microbiome and the bugs that are living down there. So you don't want to miss that one. So stay tuned again next week.
I did want to also let people know that if they go to drritamarie.com/blog, they will see this radio show and the link to Mike's book as well as his videos and his other resources.
Fantastic. Yeah, so that's a good place to go. And you can get there directly if you do drritamarieradio.com, and it'll be the top entry there for the radio show. So thanks again, everyone, for being here. Thank you, Mike, for spending your time.
Thank
I know
you.
You're busy, and I really appreciate your time and energy and loving having these very stimulating conversations. So bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much.
Thank you.